once again, very much appreciate the opportunity to be here and to be studying this subject with you, which to me, as I've already mentioned, is a very near and dear subject, especially as we think about the nature of marriage itself and the way that it does not seem to be working in the society in which we find ourselves. And so if that's the case, we know that that certainly has been an influence on the Lord's people as well. And marriage is not working amongst God's people nearly as well as it should. And we're starting to mimic way too closely the ways of the world regarding marriage as we watch the difficulty of keeping marriages together and faithfulness in marriage and things of that nature. And so what we want to do this morning is talk about what every marriage requires is the name of this lesson. And it is really going to be a four-point lesson. It won't take us long to get through the 4 points, but I want you to think of them this way. There's going to be a mindset followed by an action, followed by a mindset, followed by an action. I think that's going to help us get from where we want to be to where we need to be. We had the chance to talk about the importance of godliness in our marriage on Friday evening. Had the chance to talk yesterday about our roles as husbands and wives. And so we've laid down a lot of principles for the things that we ought to be doing. And this lesson really is geared toward how is it that we're going to be able to secure the kind of marriage that God would have us to secure. And this, of all the lessons, probably is the one that at least has one or two points that are most focused to help not only those who are already married, but even those who have not yet married. There are some things that have to be taken into consideration before you make that choice to marry, and things that you need to think about regarding what it is that we're going to be trying to accomplish through our marriage. So we want to talk about what we are calling four goals to keeping the covenant. The lesson that follows this one will be the lesson on the covenant itself, and is going to talk about the significance of the covenant itself. But if we'll just at least right now accept the fact that marriage is a covenant, we'll talk about how that is in the next session. If we'll just accept it is a covenant, then we need to think in terms of how is it that we can secure that covenant? How is it that we're going to make it work the way that God would have it to work? When you think in terms of the amount of marriages that are being severed regularly, we deal with the statistics or hear the statistics regularly in our country that about half of all marriages end up broken, end up in divorce. And if half are ending up divorced, how many on top of that are struggling mightily, but maybe not reaching the point of divorce? And you start thinking there may be not only 50% divorce, but maybe another quarter of them have troubles and struggle. We've got a large number of marriages that aren't accomplishing what God would have us to accomplish in marriage. He doesn't intend that it be a lifetime struggle, that there's never any real joy or real contentment in. We said that's not the goal, but that is a byproduct of a good marriage. A marriage that is godly and serving God in the proper fashion will have great joy. Great bliss. It is the one relationship on earth that most mimics our relationship with God. I can't imagine that for a Christian there's anything that is more joyous than to think about our relationship with our Heavenly Father and with Jesus Christ our Savior and with the Spirit and all that they've done for us and all that we have in that relationship ought to create in us incredible joy. God says marriage is the picture of that. And we ought to be experiencing that kind of joy as well. So we want to look at four things that we need to do in order to accomplish these things, because and it doesn't matter what stage you're at in this covenant relationship. It doesn't matter if you're even in this covenant relationship yet. These things are going to apply. And you're going to find out they don't apply only to marriage. They apply to marriage because I think God has set up our lives so that they apply to most things that we are involved in. First, you need to decide on your goals. I want you to turn to Hebrews chapter 12 for just a moment. We mentioned in the men's class yesterday the fact that the disciples fell asleep when Jesus had asked them to watch and pray while he went off into the garden a little farther and he prayed to the Father and he was in great agony. Then they all fled. They came and arrested Jesus later and all the disciples fled, and Peter denied him to the point we know of cursing about, I just absolutely don't know him. What caused them to fail so miserably in carrying out what they were supposed to be doing and allowed Jesus to succeed so strongly in what he was supposed to be doing. It certainly is not the fact that they were men and he was God. If Jesus accomplished what he accomplished because he was God, then that doesn't really help me. He accomplished what he accomplished through the same means that he gives us. And that's why he tells us that the writer of Hebrews tells us he was tempted in every way just like we are, and yet he overcame. The only benefit for that statement for me is if he did that with the tools he gives me. And he tells me that he did. We're told by Paul in 1 Corinthians that there's no temptation, there's nothing that we go through that God hasn't provided for us a means to deal with. Jesus took the means. The disciples did not. Hebrews chapter 12 helps you to understand that. Look what it says. Verse 1, therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who, look at this, here's your reason. What enabled him to go through that? Who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Jesus knew where he was going. Jesus had a goal established and knew what it was he was trying to accomplish, and he had put that before him. I used to do, as I mentioned before, I used to do a lot of boating in Florida, both sailing and power boating, that kind of thing. There was always an expression when we would sail. You might get out to sail, and we would mostly sail on small sailboats, catamarans, things of that nature. But as you would get out, somebody would say, is it a good wind today? Well, that's kind of an interesting question. Because there are good winds and bad winds when you're sailing. And it's not always what you think. You know, sometimes you think, I can't sail because the wind's blowing straight at me. Well, you can. You can sail directly into the wind. Really, not directly. You tack, they call it. You're going back and forth at 45-degree angles. The wind's pulling behind your sail and pulling you along, even though it appears to be blowing in your face. But that's not the same kind of good wind as if the wind is behind you at the right angle, because then it requires much less effort. And so there's a good wind, there's a bad wind. There's a gentleman that I thought had a very interesting quote let me go ahead and hit this point. When we talk about the direction that we're going, goals give us direction. We need to know where it is we're heading. But he went on to say that if you don't know what port you're headed for, no wind is a good wind. That's a great quote. I love that. I don't know. Is it a good wind or is it a bad wind when you set out to sail? Where are you going? If you don't know where you're going, how do you determine if it's a good wind or a bad wind? It is critically important that we know where we're going. I would tell you this is the one point, I think, that as far as the way God has laid out life in general, this is the one point that ought to mean the most to us when we start thinking about who it is that we are selecting as our mate. Because if my goal is to seek and please God with all my heart, if that's what my goal in life is, if I want to be as godly and as righteous as I can and seeking heaven and seeking God with everything that I have, and I choose to marry somebody who does not have that as a goal, I have really put myself behind the eight ball. I've put myself in a situation. That doesn't mean that God says it can't happen. It doesn't even mean that God says it can't succeed. And we know that there are many people that are taught after marriage, prior to getting married, but God is saying, I do need you to understand something. If you're going to end up, and I had a study this past week with a young lady at our congregation that is in exactly this situation. She's been married now, I'm thinking like 18 years, 19 years, something like that. They've got three children. They're really facing those battles now because the husband has no spiritual interest at all. They're fighting those battles of the kids are old enough to stout and are now start saying, Dad's staying home, why can't I stay home? And they're going through all those battles. I'm just saying, if my goal is to go this way, and I pick a person whose goal is to go this way, we're going to have a constant struggle or issue in life. God tells us it is important that we look for. When Solomon was led away by wives, or when Israel went into the land and God talked about the importance of driving out those that were serving the idols and stuff, the reasoning he gave was, if you don't, people that are headed the other direction will have a tendency to pull you that direction with them. It's a battle. We need to know where we're going, and we seriously need to look for somebody that is heading the same direction as we are, that has the same goals in life as we have. And our goals first ought to be spiritual. We know that. Jesus said there's nothing more important than loving God with all your heart. We know that that's the direction that he wants us to take. Secondly, goals keep us focused. That helps. You know, it's like the finish line mentality. I know I'm headed somewhere, and so once I've set the goal out there, I continue to look at it because it keeps me focused. It keeps me from being distracted. I preached a lesson, I guess it's been about a year ago now, that was called Satan's Weapons of Mass Distraction. I think he's a master at that. He doesn't always just slam you in the face and try to get you to just turn your back and do what's evil. Sometimes he does. Sometimes he's successful that way. But I would tell you, with most Christians, if we have the full frontal attack, we have a tendency to get our defenses up. We're just not going to accept the full frontal attack from Satan. So we're ready to fight on that level sometimes more often than we are if he says, you know what, let me see if I can just slip him this way a little bit. Let me see if I can get him distracted a little bit. The advantage of goals keep me absolutely focused. I need to always look. He says, looking unto Jesus. Keep looking that way, because if you don't, there's a chance that you go the wrong direction because you're not focused. When we were in Florida, we used to go out in the water. How many people in here have ever just been out in the ocean, walking out into the ocean or walking out into the Gulf, something like that, where there are tides and currents and things of that nature? You ever walked out like that in water? We did that on several occasions. I remember on one occasion, we left our stuff there at the shoreline. We were walking out. We were doing some wade fishing in the flats, as they call them. Currents were fairly strong that day. And so we just walked out. There's nothing really on the horizon except the horizon. So very difficult to tell the direction. But you can generally tell if you're walking pretty straight. And so we walked out. And I don't know how far we walked out. The shelf there was very shallow. So we walked out quite a ways. A couple hundred yards, I would guess, something like that. When we turned around to come back in, we were more than a quarter mile downstream from where we had started out without ever realizing we had ever moved. You just feel like you're walking straight out, but you don't have a point. Now, walking back to where our stuff was, as long as you looked at where you're walking, you could maintain the direction the whole time. That's the nature of what God is saying. He says, you've got to look unto Jesus. If you're going to keep walking in a straight line, you've got to keep your eyes focused in a straight line. One man said, and I thought it was a good quote, he said, heaven is to steer, hell is to drift. And I think that's exactly right. You need to make sure that you're steering the right direction. After our relationships with God, our relationship in marriage has to absolutely be top priority. Has to be top priority. God says that's the nature of life. In Matthew chapter 6, when Jesus was teaching, you remember he said, you know, the world's just consumed with a lot of things, a lot of thoughts. They're interested in taking care of themselves, and they're interested in providing. And he said, God wasn't saying it's not important to give any thought at all to those things. But he said, seek first. If you'll seek first the kingdom of God, if you'll seek first God's righteousness, he said, those things will take care of themselves. God will take care of the things he's promised to take care of. It will work on the things he tells us to work on. I think marriage is the same way. This is the top priority. It is the only relationship that is intended to last as long as you shall live at the same level. And by at the same level, I mean that with the exact same commitment, all the same responsibilities. My children will be my children until one of us leaves this earth. I understand that. But they are no longer primarily my children. All three of our children are now primarily somebody else's husband. That's their primary relationship. When I marry a couple, when I perform the ceremony, I have the children turn and face the parents, both sets of parents. And I talk to the parents and I talk to the children. And I say, this child, this daughter, will no longer primarily be your daughter. She will primarily be his wife. You will no longer primarily be the parents of this child. And then telling the daughter, they will no longer primarily be your parents in the sense of you being their daughter is the primary relationship. You will now primarily be the wife of this man. That's critically important to understand that even children, that relationship is not lifelong. God intends that they eventually have their own household as well. But my marriage is lifelong. It is the relationship that I need to give the priority to. And the way you give priority to something is you've got to establish some boundaries. You have to establish boundaries. You just can't do it otherwise. If your career takes top priority, your marriage can't. If your children take top priority, your marriage can't. If your friends take top priority, your marriage can't. You have to establish boundaries around your marriage in order for the marriage to work the way that God says. That means we seriously have to think about dedicating some time to it. Secondly, not only the goals, but the second is that we need to develop a plan. What's the difference between a plan and a goal? Somebody tell me, how would you define that? The difference between a plan and a goal. All right. One is the way to get there. The other is I know where I want to go, the end point. I've set that out there. So as we think about the relationship between the two, I like this description. A goal is what you need to be. A plan is what you need to do to be what you need to be. I think that's a good description of that. A goal is great. Have you ever set a goal that you didn't keep? Just all nod your head yes, because we know we have. We've set goals. You know, it's interesting sometimes you talk to people and they say, you know what, I need to pray more. I need to be more fervent in prayer. Only to find out, you know what, they get several months down the road and they think, I'm still in the same patterns I used to be in. Or I need to read the Bible more to find out they stay in the same patterns. Judy and I have two different methods to our daily Bible reading. I read a certain number of pages a week, both biblically and in my extra reading as well. And so I can just make sure I stay, if I know if I'm reading this amount of pages per week of the materials that I'm reading, then I meet my goal. She has one of those checklists, you know, daily Bible reading checklist. She is masterful at that. For I can't tell you how many years she has read through her Bible cover to cover, different ways, but has read through it cover to cover year after year after year after year. But to her, it is so critically necessary to be able to put that check mark there and to be able to go back the next day and understand, here's exactly what I need to read. And that's good because that's a plan. Here's her plan. She says, I have to read. If I'm going to accomplish my goal of getting through the Bible again this year, I need to read this amount today. And so she reads that amount today. That's the idea of having a plan. It becomes critically necessary to establish a plan. The problem is, I would tell you, there are very few people that set plans for their marriage. Not very many couples sit down and say, you know what, let's plan out this next year. Let's chart a course for our marriage this year. Let's chart a course for how much time we want to spend together this year. Let's chart a course for how much time we want to spend in prayer, how we're going to accomplish that in prayer. We're going to do it at this particular time or this particular time. We have daily devotional times that we spend, but we've set that aside, and we know that that time is already set aside. And if I didn't do that, I can assure you, I'd like to think I'd still carry out all those things, but I wouldn't. It's because there's a plan in place that enables me to keep repeating the same kind of thing over and over again. Are we thinking about that with our marriages? Are we thinking, where do you want your marriage to be? Setting the goal. Where do you want your marriage to be 5 years from now? Where do you want it to be a year from now? Where do you want it to be for 10 years from now? Once you establish where you want it to be a year from now, how are you going to get there? How am I going to get from where I am today to where I want my marriage to be a year from now? It requires planning. If you're not married yet, I would tell you, the planning for the wedding pales in comparison to the amount of planning that should be done for the marriage. We need to really plan for the marriage. If not, you end up with that someday syndrome. You know what? I'm always reaching out there. It's always going to happen. It just never seems really to happen. That's the result of not planning. You know what? I'm going to get better at that. When I meet with couples, sometimes you'll have a husband or wife say, you know what, I really don't do that very well. I'm going to get better at that. And I love them to say that because my response is always, tell me exactly how you're going to get better at that. Now, they may or may not want to tell me, but it's going to force them to at least evaluate that. And if they won't tell me, I ask them, I said, at least do this. Tell your wife. Tell your wife exactly how you're going to get better at this part that you say that you're struggling with. What kind of plan are you going to put into effect? That becomes very necessary. And there are some things that are necessary as you're charting a course. I like this quote by Les Parrott. Make no mistake, you'll never achieve your ideal marriage as a mere passenger. You and your partner must have your hands on the wheel. I just think that's just a good quote to me. It's like, you know what? I can't just sit over here and ride this marriage out. It isn't going to get better because I'm sitting in the passenger seat and just riding. It's going to take both of us. It's kind of like that old two-seater bicycle kind of thing that you're on. It requires both of us to be in there. And that, you find out that's important. They've got those in Disney. Don't know if you've ever been over in the boardwalk area, but they've built little canopy type thing. They look like cars, but they're really just two-seater bicycles beside each other. And as you're going around in the boardwalk, you realize there's three little bridges that are going over. And those aren't 10-speed bikes. You're not going to shift them down a few gears so that you can pedal easier. It takes some real effort. Well, Judy and I are over there with Ralph and Paul on one occasion in one of those four-seater type deals, and they were in the front, we were in the back. And we're pedaling along as we headed toward the first bridge. I tapped Judy. I said, look like you're straining real hard. Keep your feet on the pedals, but don't apply any pressure at all. And that's what we did. And we got to the first hill, and Ralph kept turning around, and he thought, are you guys even pedaling? Sweat's pouring off of him, but we're just kind of cruising along. You know, and he worked as hard as he could to get to the top of that hill. Barely got us up there. I'm telling you, that's the way it works in marriage if everybody in it's not working. I'm not saying you can't ever get there, but it requires a lot more effort with one person working the plan than with two people working the plan. We need to put forth that effort. How are you going to chart that course? First, ask for divine guidance. Psalm 121 says, unless the Lord builds the house, what? Anybody? Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain to build. He says, you're just wasting your time. You better start with God. Marriage is not going to be accomplished in a godly fashion unless you're using God's method to accomplish it. That's why we looked at Ephesians chapter 5, 1 Peter chapter 3, those other passages that help us understand, here's what he's telling husbands to do and be. Here's what he's telling wives to do and be. You need to ask God. You need to seek his guidance. You need to be on your knees asking for his help, his graciousness in your marriage. You need to be living in his word and seeing what it is that he asks us to do to have that kind of marriage. Secondly, you're going to have to consider what matters most. Remember Mark chapter 8, Jesus said, you know what? I mean, Jesus is very bottom line. Very bottom line. God's very bottom line. You know, in other words, God wants you to be able to see the end from the beginning. He says you need to make your decision the right way, but you need to understand it all. Somebody asked me one time, said, is God pro-choice? I said, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, if you want to ask me if he's pro-abortion, I'll tell you no. But is he pro-choice? God is absolutely, positively pro-choice. He has proven that over and over again in the Scriptures. But the thing you better remember with that is God is also equally pro-consequence. He says, you can choose what you want to choose. It's your choice. I'm not going to force you to do anything, but understand there are consequences. He's very bottom line. In life. He's that way in our marriages as well and in life in itself. You remember Jesus said, look, you're just going to have to evaluate. What are you going to give in exchange for your soul? If you're going to give up your soul, if you're not going to follow God, tell me what does it take to be worth it? I think that's why he asked the question that way. What shall a man give? I mean, that ought to be a rhetorical question, hadn't it? You shouldn't be able to answer that anyway. He's just saying, seriously, just evaluate your soul. What could you possibly gain that would make it worth giving up your soul? I would ask a married couple the same thing about your marriage. What is there on this earth that could ever hold more value than your marriage that God has given? You have to consider what matters most. You have to prioritize your marriage. Michelle Weiner Davis, who's a marriage and family therapist and an author, wrote this. The number one cause for breakdown of marriages today is the same issue that causes infidelity. Couples aren't prioritizing their marriage. People spend time on their careers, their kids, community affairs, hobbies, sports, but they take their spouses for granted. It just doesn't work that way. In other words, to have a strong marriage, your spouse must come first. That becomes critical that we understand nothing on this earth matters more than this marriage, I better be willing to consider it that way. And if I do that, then I'm going to have to decide what I want to change. Why? Because everything can't stay the same. Unless my marriage is perfect right now, something has to change. It may be little things, sometimes it may be large things, but if I'm going to evaluate that I need to get from here to here, well, I haven't gotten there by doing what I've been doing, so I need to change some things. I need to evaluate, consider the things that I'm going to change in my life. There are some things I need to drop, that kind of thing. As you think about the idea of commitment, which we'll mention in a minute, think of, how many people in here have like a to-do list, or we said, or like a day plan or something like that? Anybody ever do that? Raise your hands if you are the type of person who always completes everything on your to-do list or your day planner every day that you've got it mapped out. It doesn't work that way very often, does it? How many times have you gone in to work or you've looked at the things you have to do and just looked at the list and immediately decided, I can't get it all done? I can tell you, that's a critical facet of being able to accomplish anything. I need to be willing to say, you know what, there's more on the list than I can do today. And as soon as I acknowledge that, what's the first thing I really need to do? Prioritize. I've got to do, something's dropping off the list. I may as well pick what it is because not everything on the list is equally important. So I need to change some things. I need to alter some things in my life. I need to do that in my marriage as well. Set some specific short-term goals. Specific short-term goals. Make sure that it's not just, you know what, 10 years from now, I want to have a blissful marriage. Well, it's going to take something more specific than that. It's going to take something shorter term than that. You know what? I'm going to set a goal this week. I haven't been doing real good at this. I'm going to set a goal this week. I am going to tell my wife I love her the first thing every morning for the next 7 days. That's a goal that you can not only accomplish, but you can look back and see that you accomplished, and you can further it after that. But setting some specific long-term goals. I can't set a goal that just says, you know what, I need to start telling Judy I love her more. I can tell you what will happen if I tell you that, if I tell her that, or if I think that myself. Sometimes I will, sometimes I won't. But if I set a goal specifically for myself, if this is what I'm going to do, then I can do that and accomplish that. Thirdly, we need to back to a mindset, need to determine to commit. We'll not spend a lot of time on this one because this is what the next lesson is mostly about. The idea of this is what your wedding vows are all about. I mean, it's important that they're vows, and we'll talk about that next time. But what we need to think of is it's not that we don't want to commit. There are enemies of commitment, and we're constantly battling the enemies of commitment in life. We need to understand that commitment is a choice. It's a choice. Because the enemy of commitment is overcommitment. That's one of them. How many people do you know that just say, you know what, life is just too busy. There's just too much going on. It's not that I wouldn't like to do that. I would love to spend more time with my wife, but we've got this going on Monday and this going on Tuesday and this going on Thursday and Friday. We're at services on Wednesday. We're at services on Sunday. We commit to so many things. Especially for younger people. I would tell you this. Here's one of the things you better recognize early on in marriage. When you have children, your children do not need to be able to play 3 musical instruments, play 3 sports, take gymnastics, and be involved in several projects at school. I understand. Sometimes that looks like it's a great thing. But you can run yourself ragged with the commitment for things that you have put your children in and sacrifice your marriage in doing so. We understand the difficulty of that. When our kids were in Little League, all three of them in Little League at the same time in Florida. In Temple Terrace area in Florida, there were 700 kids in the one local Little League. We never had to leave that field area. 700 kids in the one Little League. Our children at 10, 11, and 12 years old played a 50-game season. Is that absurd? Seriously, I mean, how absurd is that we ever even allowed ourselves to get caught up in that? And I tell you that we've got a wonderful, wonderful marriage after 34 years. But I'm telling you that those couple of years where that was going on did nothing to promote the wonderful marriage that we have. Man, we were just running ragged. That's easy to do, especially because Some, a couple of them were playing musical instruments on top of that. They were involved in other things at school. It's easy to be overly committed. Secondly, selfishness is a major issue with commitment. Sometimes we just want to do what we want to do. You're going to have to make a choice. Remember Joshua saying, you're going to have to choose, guys. You choose today who you want to serve. It can be the gods across the river. It can be the gods back where you came from. It can be the gods here of this land itself. It can be the God of heaven. But you're going to have to make a choice. And then Joshua helped him understand something about choice is not easy. Joshua said, as for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord. And the people said, what? We too will serve the Lord. And Joshua said, great, that's what I wanted to hear. No, Joshua said, you can't do it. I tell you, that's a strange evangelistic or discipling kind of method, isn't it? Think about telling, somebody comes to you and says, you know what, I want to be baptized and I want to serve the Lord. How often have you ever said, you can't do it? We think, wow, don't want to do that. But Joshua was saying it's tough. You just need to understand the commitment that you're making, and it's going to require time and sacrifice. If you don't dedicate time and sacrifice to your marriage will not be what God wants it to be. And then finally, it takes dedication. That's not the same as commitment. Commitment's the mindset. Dedication is the carrying out of that mindset. It requires two things, really, when we think of dedication. One, it requires patience. I remember telling people sometimes that, you know what? It requires patience to be married to my wife. People think, well, that's a strange thing to say. But it takes equal or more patience to be married to me. It takes patience to be married, doesn't it? And we're not a very patient people. You know, just think about yourself rounding the last aisle in the grocery store. We all have become just absolutely adept at just scanning the register to see where the shortest line is and where the fastest cashier is. Sometimes the shortest line has the slowest cashier, and so we say, can't go there. Because I might say, or booting up a computer. I can tell you, can't tell you how many times my computer has taken 2 seconds longer to get somewhere than I wanted it to. I'm thinking, come on. You ever done that? We're dealing in seconds, and sometimes we aren't willing to wait for it. Loved a description of one man. He said he was at a red light. His car stalled. The guy behind him had no patience, was just laying on the horn when the light turned green, just kept honking and honking. He said, I kept trying and trying to start the car. He said, I finally got out, walked back to the car behind me. He says, hey, I got an idea. He says, if you'll go up and try and start my car, I'll sit here and honk your horn for you. We're just not very patient, but marriage takes patience. And we're talking about in short order patience, but it doesn't take just patience, it takes endurance. And I would tell you that's more important. It takes endurance. That when you think about Job, sometimes we think in terms of, you know, consider or remember the patience of Job. It's not really the patience. Not like the patience in that grocery line or the patience with something, my computer not working fast enough. It's consider the endurance of Job. How much he went through to get from where he was to where he ended up. How much he endured, how much weight was on his shoulders. This is the idea of dedication. It is saying sometimes marriage is going to be this. It's going to be, there's my goal, there's my path to get to my goal, but it's going to take all my effort to pick up one foot and place it in front of the other. And pick up the foot and put it in front of the other. Dedication is always, not always pleasure. Sometimes it is just forcing yourself to take the next step because you are absolutely determined to get there. That's the nature of dedication. And we need to have that kind of dedication, that kind of endurance in marriage. Several years ago, we went with a group from our congregation out to Colorado, stayed in Estes Park, drove one day early in the morning, got up about 4 in the morning, drove over to the area they call Mitchell Pass, so we could, or Miller Pass, so we could go up the mountain called Mount Ida. We were going to do a mountain hike, summit the mountain. Started at 10,000 feet, went to 13,000 feet. I learned a couple lessons. Let me make this point, and the lesson is yours. See, I said, let me make this point. No, I'm just kidding. We started taking that trip, and I learned a couple things. Learned first, listen to what the guide says. The guide said, walk at a pace of about 1 mile per hour. Have you ever tried that? I got on the treadmill, said, let me see what 1 mile per hour is. You got to look down to make sure you're moving. 1 mile per hour doesn't feel like you're moving, so I thought, 1 mile per hour? No way. So we started out, they made a mistake of putting me in the lead. We walked at about a regular neighborhood pace, about 4 miles per hour, 9 minutes, 59 seconds into the walk. We're all sitting on the ground trying our best to get oxygen from anywhere it might be. We finally slowed our pace down, continued to walk. It's only a little over 4 miles. It's a 4.5 hour hike up, 2 hours down. We kept walking. When we got close to 13,000 feet, I found out there's no oxygen at 13,000 feet. So I'm hunched over and I'm trying as my best just to get any wind at all. And it's literally taking one step at a time. I would walk from here to about where that wall is and have to stop for about 30 seconds just to catch my breath. But we had made a determination we were going to reach the summit. Buzzards followed us the last hour of our hike, I can tell you that. They knew it was coming. I would have never summited it had we not set the goal, had we not established a plan, and had we not determined that we were getting there. But I would tell you the last hour of that hike was as excruciating to me as anything else I'd ever done. It just was a matter of forcing yourself to lift up the foot. Marriage sometimes will be there, people. But you still have to keep pressing on. And just remember, always, don't fall behind. Easier to stay up than it is to catch up. It's worth the effort, whatever it takes now, to stay up with the game, to be able to be there in your marriage where it's supposed to be, so that you can end up where God wants you to end up. Set the goals, establish a plan, determine to commit, and have the dedication to finish. And we'll go a long way in our marriages. Thank you.